Hi, Gudvach. This is Yisachar Wartell, and this week is Parshat Beshalach, crossing the Yam Suf and moving our way through Sefer Shemot. Also, I wanted to mention Sarbel by Lechel Mendel. Shalom Haven Aliyah. So let's dive right in, shall we? There's so much to talk about, of course, but I'm going to start off with something which a different Yisachar, one who's much greater than me, Rabbi Yisachar Friend, whom I've had the pleasure of meeting multiple times, in his 5768 Dvar, asked the question, what connection is there between Tu B'Shvat and Parshat Beshalach? Now he cites the book Ziv HaMinhagim, that when one looks outside this time of the year, even in most parts of Eretz Yisrael, the trees do not look lush, they are not blossoming, they look in a sense dead, right? Most trees in Eretz Yisrael, and certainly the U.S., begin to blossom in Adar or Nisan. So why do we celebrate the new year for trees now in Shvat? He answers that the trees look dead, but they're in fact very much alive. He explains that this is the precise time of the year when the sap begins to flow heavily within a tree. This is when the sap begins moving. So even though you can't see it, this is actually when the rebirth or regrowth of the tree starts happening, right? It's also when people go to Vermont to get the syrup. Now, Rebbetzin Aviva Orlean explains that winter is actually the most important time for a tree. It's the time when the roots take in nutrients, the tree prepares, does all of necessary preparations for its blooms and its overall growth that it will have in the coming year. And she quotes numerous sources that liken a tree to a human being, which is also something which Rav Zev Lef and many, many other Rebbeim talk about. The eighth is like Isha Sada, many, many different things, many, many different ways to connect a man to a tree. I'm not going to get into that now. But winter is, I mean, tiny, but not really. Winter is the gestation period for the tree, effectively. We do not see the children yet, right? We don't see anything coming out. We don't see flowers. We most of the time don't even see any buds, right? But everything that's needed for them to emerge is beginning to happen and is being prepared during this time. And it's all starting to unravel, which all begins with the flowing of the sap. Bnei Israel did not see the fruits of their labor. They only saw slavery and misery. They could not see how their quote-unquote dead circumstance was very much alive and ready to erupt in a flurry of miracles. In the beginning of this week's parsha, the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim and head out into the Midbar. And they think they're free, but they're seemingly trapped. And Rebbetzin Orlean explains that when Bnei Yisrael felt most trapped with the dangerous wilderness in front of them and the raging sea at their side and the Egyptian army at their back, that was actually a true blessing. Because Bnei Yisrael did not know what Hashem wanted, and they had no choice but to pray to get away from the Egyptians, and therefore Hashem orchestrated what was best for them, which was precisely to have the Egyptians chase them so that not only could Bnei Yisrael witness countless miracles that took place by the Kriyas Yamsov, but would also acquire vast wealth from the Egyptian army, far greater than they already had acquired during Makor Choshech, the ninth plague. Now, the Midrash teaches that Nachshon ben Aminadav also did not know what was going to happen, and he trusted in Hashem that all would be for the best, and therefore he went first into the Yamsov, according to many opinions, up to his neck or his nose, and only then, when displaying true bitachon, did in fact the Yamsov split. Now, Rav Friend also teaches that immediately after Kriyas Yamsov, when Bnei Yisrael was complaining about the lack of water, there's a lot of notions of water in this week's parsha, and a displaying lack of bitachon in Hashem, Hashem commanded Moshe to throw a branch into the water, symbolizing the lesson of the tree, among many, many other lessons. And he writes, the tree is a symbol that when all looks futile and bleak, desolate, and destroyed, we see that the situation can turn around, that rebirth actually happens. There can be, in fact, renaissance. These are his actual words. There can be renaissance and renewal. Throwing the tree into the water was meant as a message to the people, saying, don't give up. Don't worry about the desert. Things look bleak now, but the salvation of the Lord, meaning Hashem, comes in the blink of an eye. Those are Friend's words. Beautiful words at that. And there's so many lessons I could get into about the lessons of the tree, one of which is something which Rav Lef explains, that we're actually like an upside down tree. I think it's Rav Lef who explains it, that our roots are in the heaven, because we get our nourishment, our true nourishment from spiritual items such as, you know, Torah, divine energy, etc. And that our leaves, so to speak, are more corporeal being, if you will, more attached to the ground. So it's a little bit, and then the fruit, you know, kind of are in the middle, just like it would be for a tree. And then they pass on to generations. Obviously, the concept of being fruitful, multiply, applies for all of creation, but most notably for humans, animals, and trees. Also, if you look at the word eights, the letter ayin mystically connotes perspective, right? Which just makes sense because it's correlated to the word ayin, which means eye. right? So this, in fact, ayin, is your perspective for things. So any word that you see beginning with the letter ayin usually has something in some way to do with perspective or one's perspective on something or how one can have an outlook on something. And the letter tzadi is a little less straightforward as to its meaning. It's usually something which stands out, but can have other meanings as well. But what's interesting that in the word eighth, it's a final tzadi. That's all it is. It's just the ayin of perspective and the tzadi, which actually kind of looks like a tree. If you think about the way that the final tzadi looks, not in script, of course, but in either block or Torah letters, right? It kind of looks like a tree. It's like a kind of like a slanted tree. It's branching out and it's sticking up, sticking down, whatever you want to look at it. And we have to be able to see sometimes, we have to be able to see the trees in front of us. They teach us so many amazing lessons. You know, again, as we said, to prepare. Sometimes you're not going to see the fruits of your labor right away. Sometimes you have to put in a lot of effort and get that quote-unquote sap flowing in your body, whether it's your workflow, your energy, your Torah flow, your Torah learning, you know, getting into a rhythm, getting into a pattern. You might not see results right away, and that's okay, because it can lead to beautiful blossoms and beautiful trees and beautiful fruits. And then certainly if you do that properly in your family, then those fruits are your children, and they'll be able to grow, and they'll be able to grow proper trees, and they'll be able to prepare themselves for what they need to do. And of course, your children, if you have children, you probably realize that they initially don't appreciate what you're doing for them. They don't really realize it. They feel like you're hampering them. Mom, why do I have to do this? Dad, why do I have to do that? But it's actually a preparation, you know, for life and for many things which they can't see. So we can see so many examples, even in our own lives, how people can do things for us that are so perfect and really help prepare us for what we need. So too, Hashem prepares many things for us in our lives, and we can't necessarily see why or how certain things are happening, but know that the blossoms and the fruit are coming. So I just wanted to touch off with one other idea, pretty unrelated. So after Bnei Israel, you know, goes through the Yom Suf and the issues with the water, everything like that, they go through a variety of different circumstances. There's many things with water. You have the water and the rock this time also. They're given the gift of man, given the gift of manna and its respective laws. And perhaps for the first time, they are called an Eda, a congregation. However, the plain word for congregation is kahal, right? So what's the difference between a kahal and an eda? An eda stems from the root of aid, meaning witness or testimony. And it's something more. It is a people who are a testimony to Hashem's creation and his role in the world. A kahal is a grouping of Jews. But when we are an eda, we are a testimony to everything in this world that Hashem has put there, the testimony to his creation and everything that he has done and put into the world, and that he plays an active role in it. The manna, the man, was a testimony of Hashem's love for us, but also functioned as a means of providing faith. As Rabbi Wallerstein explains, that when they said, man who, right, it is man, that's what the word means, like, what is it? So they said, mahu, why did they say mahu, why not manhu? And that's a whole separate question. But the words manhu can be rearranged into emuna, right, because Hashem is testing them. This thing which you don't know is going to be the most amazing thing you've ever seen in your life. Right, it just looks like this white powder, this white seed, this white whatever. It's going to be delicious, and it's going to taste anything like you want, like anything you want, and it's going to sustain you for 40 years in the Midbar. It's not going to generate waste. You can't even imagine what it is, but it's something so miraculous, right? And in addition to that, he teaches us, right, on the Yom Shishi, in the sixth day, you're going to go out and collect twice because you're not going to go out and collect on Shabbos, right? So he's also teaching us about the gift of Shabbos, which, of course, is also a testimony to the creation of Hashem's role in the creation itself and the role of the world. Now, Shabbos, on numerous occasions, is referred to as an aid, a witness, or a testimony, and it is the testimony, in fact, of Hashem's creation and mastery of the world. And it also energizes us in a powerful way because it gives us a gift. It is a gift, and it's a tool that enables us to be the unique Eda, the unique testimony of the world, of Hashem in the world, as Bnei Yisrael, as Klal Yisrael. And may we keep all of these lessons in mind as we move forward to Shabbos, to Tu B'Shvat, in the coming week. Shabbat Shalom.